Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome an accomplished author and a podcast host from Dublin, Ireland, Mr. Aidan McCullen. Aidan, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Ash. Really great pleasure.
Thank you. Aidan is an author of a book titled Undisreputable, A Mindset of Permanent Reinvention for Individuals, Organizations, and Life. And he's the host and the founder of the Global Innovation Show. So Aidan, before we talk about your book, when I was reading about you, you had such an amazing journey. Tell me about your amazing journey from a career in rugby to digital transformation, innovation delivery, and now culture and leadership.
It's been a squiggly career, as they call it, mm-hmm. Ash. So firstly, I want to say when people hear our audience, when you hear somebody successful, you never see all the scars that have healed to pull all the success together. And it's really important to recognize that because, you know, the whole idea of the victors write the history is true. But I like to share the challenges of the journey as well, just so people know that everybody has challenges, no matter how wealthy, no matter how successful. And success is relative as well. Success depends on how you measure it. So just want to say that up front, because I think that's important, because people can get discouraged and you have to start somewhere. That's the thing. And for me, you start with vision. And for me, the vision started for me as a child. So I was the last picked on this playground. I was that kid, really terrible athlete, probably never got much better than being a terrible athlete. I was very lucky along my journey. So we in Ireland, we play a sport like the way, for example, cricket is widespread in a place like India. Here we play our native sport, which is Gaelic football. So when we became very native in our approach to sports, and this lasted right up until quite recently in the last two decades or so, you weren't allowed to play the national sport and play soccer, for example, because soccer was seen as an English sport and you weren't allowed to play both. So kids used to hide and sneak into one team and the other team, etc. So we had very much a focus on this football, Gaelic football, and hurling, which is a crazy game with a stick that we play and a tiny little, very hard leather ball as well, called hurling. So that was the kind of environment into which I grew as a child. I tried at all these sports, wasn't very good. Ended up trying to find a sport that worked for me. And really what happened was my friends started to play rugby. And rugby was one of these kind of English sports that you weren't really allowed to play. And it was very difficult to play both any other sport and rugby. So when I went to school, our school played it. And eventually, I was 12 the first time I touched a rugby ball. And by 16, I had used all the failed attempts at the other sports, actually gave me a different type of approach to playing rugby. And that was kind of my, if you call it, my quirk, my difference. And eventually I got on to I went on to captain my province and then went on to play for my country as well.
Wow.
And the most amazing thing for me was I never intended to. I went to France to study French while at college. I was still at college in Dublin. You know, Trinity College here in Dublin. I was at college there studying French and German, and I wanted to take Erasmus year, which is this amazing year where we can get an opportunity in Europe to go and study in a different country. And I instead got a contract for a rugby team in France to learn French. And that was just this amazing difference for me that taught me how to play rugby differently, and then I enjoyed a career of 10 years playing rugby.
Incredible. So my next question is, how has your rugby career influenced your perspective on leadership and team dynamics?
It's very transferable, Ash. There's a lot of things transferable. One of the things I don't like, just to say up front, is also that you get a lot of you know, you'll have a business event. You are a successful entrepreneur. You'll have seen this loads where they bring in a former sports player and they come in and tell you how it's done. And there's a huge difference, though, you have to understand, which is in a professional sports environment, people are there because they want to be there. It's not always the case in an organization, as I discovered when I retired and went into the real world.
Right.
Because you saw how people could resist change. You saw how they could undermine it in many, many ways. They could pretend they were adding their support and really be sabotaging an effort of transformation. So that was interesting. For me, it's also personal as well. It depends on how good you were. For example, I wasn't that talented, but I was highly, highly disciplined because I had to be disciplined to make up for the lack of talent. And where I only wrote about this recently, that with that comes a limit in your abilities. So I could get to a certain limit of my capabilities based on really the bit of talent I had, but mainly the discipline. And I find this is very overlaps into organizational, particularly when you're trying to change your organization, is that if you don't have the capabilities in your organization to carry a new strategic ambition, you're going to fail. So you might be going, we want to digitize the business. Therefore, we need people that know how to sell a digital product. That's not the same people who have sold an analog product or a physical product in the past. It's a very different sale. So if you're going to succeed in that, they need to be coached and build up the skill set in order to do that. And they need to do that before the time comes that they need to sell it to customers.
Right.
And I see that the same in sport, that if you're a coach and you have an ambition for your team to play a certain way or to achieve a top three spot or a first spot in a league or a cup, then you have to have the right types of players with the right types of skills in order to achieve that strategic ambition.
Well said, well said. So Aidan, let's now talk about your book, Undisreputable, My Mindset of Permanent Reinvention for Individuals, Organizations, and Life. And I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Mr. Aidan McCullen's book on Amazon and whichever other platform you use. So my first question is, tell me about your book and your hypothesis when you decided to write it.
So firstly, like you, Ash, you know what it's like. You've nine, I'm sure you have another nine in you of books, because when you talk to great people every week, which I have the great honor to, not as many of you, I just passed episode 500 recently.
Wow.
But every week for the last 8 years, I've been doing that. And my model is read their book, interview them. I edit the podcast myself because that's another bite at the cherry, another opportunity to learn the content.
Correct.
And when you do that, you're bound to have your own thoughts.
Yes.
And
yes.
all those different lenses and all that different information, it's like it gets put into this mixing bowl, and the mixing bowl then marinates over time, and all of a sudden you bake your own ideas. So that's where that was partly where it came from. And then I also write, so I write a weekly article, The Thursday Thought. It's on Substack, on LinkedIn, for example. And that's where I try to take the learnings I have that are roughly related to the most recent episode. And I use a metaphor. I really think in metaphor. So I use a metaphor to try and impart a lesson from the business world through that metaphor. Because I find people, the metaphors, this way of people to stick the learning to, that could be boring if I just talk about some type of business lesson.
Right.
So I try to always think in this kind of dual approach of metaphor.
Well
and
said.
So what I did was, like you know as well, man, reading these books, some of them are very boring. Some of them are very heavy framework books. And I wanted to translate what is often very academic, esoteric writing into much more relatable text. And I have a love of ancient Eastern texts. So for example, The Art of War, The 36 Stratagems, and lots of poets like Osho, Rumi, all these great poets. And I that was in my mixing bowl, mixed with everything else. So I wrote this book based on the same kind of approach. some type of metaphor that carries a lesson of what I call the permanent reinvention mindset. And permanent reinvention, by the way, is another concept that comes from the East, from particularly this ancient symbol called the Ouroboros.
Yeah.
And the Ouroboros is either some type of serpent, like a dragon or a snake, that eats its own tail. It's often in a circular fashion or in the figure of an infinity symbol on its a number eight on its side.
Yeah.
And the snake's eating its own tail. So you know that, Ash.
Mm.
And what I like about that is the whole idea of the Ouroboros is that you must consume yourself in order to complete yourself. As in, you have scars, you have mistakes you've made, you have good things you've done in the past. And if you reframe them as fuel rather than setbacks, you can create something new. And the term I use actually comes from the concept of the phoenix. The phoenix, again, mythical creature that every 500 years burns itself up and from the ashes of what it used to be, takes what's still useful in order to earn itself a new lease of life. And the term I use is there is always assets in the ashes. So like me with sport, many of my colleagues in sport really struggle with the transition of from sport to the real world. But if you reframe your mindset and you actually see that, well, actually, team dynamics, I understand team dynamics, communication is essential in sport. Discipline is a wonderful gift that can be applied to anything, really. And that's the whole idea that there's assets in the ashes. So there's multiple kind of lenses, I call them, throughout the book, that every chapter is like a lens that you put in place. And hopefully by the end of the book, you see the world slightly differently.
Yeah. So, you know, I love this whole concept of permanent reinvention in your book, and you've just told me a little bit about it. But how can individuals cultivate a mindset of permanent reinvention in their own personal and professional lives?
A most simple thing, Ash, that I would recommend is most people have some type of area of discontent in their lives. And that feels like a buzzing fridge in the house. It feels like this niggling annoyance or irritation. And you got to remember, like my fellow countryman, George Bernard Shaw, said that all progress starts with the unreasonable man or woman. You have to have some type of discontent, because discontent is the start of progress, really. It's like an entrepreneur. You work with entrepreneurs all the time. They spot something they're unhappy with, and they try to, and instead of just putting up with it and persevering, they go, I'm going to create a solution for that problem. So that idea is essential. And one of the things I would say is, if you're unhappy in your career, firstly, make sure that you're doing everything possible to succeed in that. If you've taken it on, there was a reason you took it on. And don't leave it and be regretful. So, for example, for me in sport, I did everything possible, Ash. I didn't drink alcohol. And you know what it's like. That's difficult in Ireland. I didn't drink alcohol. Slept well, ate well, did everything, the training to the absolute perfection. So my whole concept was, if I'm going to not do as good well as I want to here, at least I know I've done everything in my power. So I think that's important, because then you have no regrets.
Right.
The second thing I would say is, take three columns, take a piece of paper, write down three columns. The first column, write down what you can do. So what skills you have. And what I hear, and I talk about this in the book, unbundle. Like the way you would a business model, unbundle your skill sets. So I'm a very good writer. I'm good at communicating. I'm a good listener, whatever it might be. And then in the second column, write down what you like to do, because some things in that first column you're really good at, but you don't like doing.
Right.
So you might be really good at marketing, but like you hate marketing, you hate doing that. You like to focus maybe on different types of skill sets. So you write down in that first column what I can do, second column what I like to do. And then in the third column, you write down jobs that will be able to bundle together some of those skill sets. And then you try to create a role for yourself that might be able to accommodate those skills and those capabilities that you have. Because we live in this world of the gig economy. And what that means is you can be working for several companies at once as a fractional CMO, a fractional marketer, a fractional CTO, where you're this multiple portfolio career. And you can be really happy because you're only doing the pieces of the work that you like. So that's one thing. Or else find an organization. And this is often in an entrepreneurial type setup, where you can be doing multiple things so you're not bored. So, for example, a lot of people get bored. Entrepreneurs have this. I think there's a little bit of ADHD in many, many entrepreneurs because you don't like doing the same thing all the time. And that's natural. So don't try and find a career like a startup where instead of going into a massive, very highly established company where you'll be responsible for this little pixel of the business, instead go into an entrepreneurial setup where you'll be doing multiple tasks and multiple things. No 2 days will be the same. That's the kind of way, like, build this for yourself. Don't just accept it and be on the ocean of life being pushed around the place. You're in charge and charge.
What a great response. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about now innovation. Based on all the work that you do, what are some misconceptions about innovation that you have encountered?
So one of the things is something I learned myself, and this is because I think we're in this transition period in the world where businesses in the past had a competitive advantage and could enjoy that competitive advantage for 10, 20, 30 years. They could build a product and market it, and that would be the way they'd enjoy success. Now we're in this period of transient advantage. So your advantage, your competitive advantage, is fleeting because some startup can come out of nowhere and build a product with cheap access to funding, Amazon Web Services or some type of cloud service where they can build a platform really, really quickly. They can have fractional workers and put a workforce together very, very quickly. And all of a sudden you have a competitor that you did not see coming. So that's the kind of world we're living in. So in the past, though, I used to see that a big legacy organization would really struggle in that period. And if you think here, now think back to the Ouroboros, and this is why I talk about the Ouroboros a lot, is if it's a figure eight on its side. So there's also a concept called the S-curve, and this is the one of the main frameworks in my book. And the S-curve is just like the letter S. And if you think about it, it's like this slow growth period for a period of time, then a rapid growth, and then a petering out or a plateau, and eventually decline. So if you think about that, that's on its side, that's half of an infinity curve. If that S curve doubles back on itself, it actually becomes the figure eight, right? So the number eight, the infinity curve. And the reason I say that is keep that in your mind and think about how organizations used to get to the top of the S curve and really, really struggle and eventually decline and sometimes go bankrupt or be acquired in not so pleasant circumstances. That was the world we lived in a lot and still happens. But I think legacy organizations are now getting their game together and understanding if they get to that period and then they have the willingness to plunge down again and actually create a new business using the skill sets they've built. This is the assets in the ashes. So they have access to customers, they have an existing brand, they have capable, competent people with inside the organization. If they retrain them, and if they couple them up with some more entrepreneurial type characters with inside the organization, they can quickly reinvent themselves and come back. And then that becomes this infinity curve, plunging down the bottom of the S curve, getting to the top, go again. And what you have there is the new and the old working in tandem. So you have the old playing an extremely noble role in enabling the new, and the new needing the old. Because this is what startups need. They need customers. They need access to marketing. They need access to funding, etc. And legacy organizations have it. So This is the huge shift that we're seeing, as organizations are waking up to this possibility.
Well said, well said. And in what is, in your view, is the role of failure in the innovation process?
Huge, huge role. So I have a chapter of the book that I call Kintsugi Thinking. Mm-hmm. And Kintsugi, as you know, Ash, is this beautiful Japanese art where you take, for example, a piece of pottery, and the pottery is smashed or broken. Mm-hmm. And instead of trying to disguise the cracks, you celebrate them. So what the artist does is takes a lacquer, and the lacquer is tinted with gold, and they celebrate the cracks. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea of don't disguise the cracks, celebrate them. So this is the concept I talk about called Kintsugi thinking. And what Kintsugi thinking is about is that when you're taking a huge bet, when you're trying something, that's a very, very bold bet, chances are that you're going to fail. And that failure should not be condemned. The person that's trying that should not be vilified by the organization.
Right.
If the failure was preventable. And what I mean there is, if they have done all their work to fail fast and fail cheaply, then that should be okay. But if they try something and it just doesn't work, then we have to look, is there assets in the ashes? Mm. What can we learn from that failure? And then we learn quickly. So it's not so much fail fast and fail quickly. It's fail, and if you're going to fail, learn quickly and go again, and fail as cheaply as possible.
Yeah.
And they're just some of the myths that we see in innovation, that people think fail fast means that, oh, you just try loads and loads of things, let a thousand flowers bloom. No, be very, very careful and see where you can play, what skill sets you have inside an organization, if you're an organization or a startup, see what trends are informing your bet. And then if you put something out there, as cheaply as possible, and learn as quickly from that. So I see failure more as learning than actually failure is it's a mindset. It's got this negative connotation that we need to change our relationship with.
Well said. Great response. So time for one more question for you. And this one is, I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and say, what trends do you foresee in the world of innovation in the next few years?
So we can't even talk about that without recognizing the impact of AI.
Correct.
Because that will enable so many of us to free up our time. One of the biggest enemies of innovation, again, the main people I work with, Ash, are people in legacy organizations where they're trying to transform the culture of the organization. Mm. That's the work I do mostly as a consultant, as a keynote speaker. And what the biggest challenge for them is they are so preoccupied with the present that they have very, very little time to focus on the future.
Mm.
And the great management thinker, Peter Drucker, said that if you're going to do something new, you have to stop doing something old.
Correct.
And I think AI, because it will bring in so much productivity, and it will be able to enable us to outsource these really heavy administration tasks that are usually mind-numbing in some way. They're not pleasant tasks. Then we can use that time, that new energy, and apply it into new ideas, new energy with inside an organization. Mm. So I think that's going to be a huge, huge shift. And I think we're going to see a shift. Many of your workers, or many of your audience, Asher, you know, 35 and under, I think we're going to have to see, understand that you're not going to be in the career you're in for long. That if you are, you're going to have huge job mobility. You're going to shift around different roles inside the organization. Mm. And the organizational structure is going to change. I think of it more less of a hierarchy and more like you see, again, this is a great metaphor. You see in starlings, for example, with the birds, a murmuration where they move around. Mm. So you have project-based teams rather than hierarchies and people with the corner office. Mm. And we'll see a shift, as many of your listeners have already seen, towards more fluid working conditions where you can work from home, you can hot desk inside the organization, and there's no tenure. The tenure whole idea, that's gone.
Right. Very well said. Aiden, on that note, I just want to say thank you so much for speaking to me. I mean, your journey is such an eye-opener, and clearly you're such a modest individual, having played for your country. You still say that I'm constantly learning, but I love the way you were able to draw such amazing parallels between your journey as an athlete and a lot of the work that is happening in the corporate world, whether it's on leadership or discipline or so many other factors. Thank you also for speaking to me about permanent reinvention. This is a new term that I read about when I was reading about you, but such a positive phrase, which is permanent reinvention. Clearly, what came through so loud and clear is the influence Eastern philosophies seem to have had on your thinking. And maybe someday I'll ask you to do another conversation on what made you, read so much about Eastern philosophies. And finally, thank you also for speaking to me about innovation and so many different aspects of innovation. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck.
Absolute pleasure, Ash.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.